Call 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org. Again, you can make your gift at kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Call now. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Welcome to So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's only here on Houston's community station, KPFT. I am your host, Hank Rubicek, and along with the best crew on radio, Greg Audell, Warren Holloman, Mary Edgerton, Eric Keen, Chris Gorman, Harwood Taylor, and Tatiana Gago, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls. So What's Your Story is an important platform for tellers, and we have scores of superb storytellers scheduled as guests, but none are as popular as the students from Maryland Performing and Visual Arts Middle School. It's a most creative lot, cultivated by their consummate broadcast journalism teacher, Miss Vinnie Arlt. Vinnie has been supplying us with remarkable students since 2013, back when I was a teenager. Some of you are laughing. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's so rude. But tonight, another medley of astonishing 6th to 8th grade students will be delivering an assortment of original, soul-inspiring works, which demonstrate their love of story. In short, get ready to enjoy something awesome. We're going to learn a little bit about each of these magnificent storytellers in just a few minutes, but right now, let me just tell you who they are. They are Addison Wolf, Wilson Terry, Nia Lewis, Giselle Martinez, and Gabby Marshall. How are all of you doing?
Pretty good.
Just making sure your mics are working. You guys look great, and this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, your school has been represented on this program since 2013. And because KPFT is listener-sponsored, we know that you are loved by our community. Now, I know that some of you have been given advice about how to handle your appearance on this show. What was some of that? What was some of that advice? Addison, were you given any kind of advice by any of your peers?
I haven't been given any specific advice, but my background in performing arts is definitely going to help me here.
Yeah, of course it will. Of course it will. Gabby, were you given any kind of advice?
Maybe just to be respectful of everyone's story.
Respectful of everyone's stories, yeah. Giselle, Nia, Wilson, I guess the three of you have been told, other than the very brilliant host that you'll be working with, you really have nothing to worry about, right? None of you are saying that. You guys are great. Can't wait to get to the stories, and we're going to get to them right now. Eighth grader, Wilson Terry. Wilson, let's start with you. Has a range of subjects about which she loves to write. She also plays the guitar and sings, so long as it isn't in front of people. Wilson, if we manage to kind of sneak up on you without you knowing it and hear you sing a song, what would we hear you sing?
Probably I Have Nothing by Whitney Houston. It's one of my favorites.
I Have Nothing by Whitney, and you're not going to sing us a few bars, but nevertheless, that is the song. So apparently that's the song that you sing pretty often?
Yeah, mostly in the shower, but yeah.
Right. All right, okay. In the shower, we all sound great in the shower, even me, which is really pretty magical. Wilson, your story, which we decided to call Urgent Observation, addresses issues with which we really currently struggle, right? So tell us your story.
2020 was a roller coaster, and not the good kind. I've only been on this earth for 14 years, but I can say with confidence that was the worst year. Though it felt like Satan had come to rain fire down on the earth, literally in Australia's case, 2020 was very eye-opening. I would have thought a pandemic might bring people together to try and get things back to normal, but it seemed to do the opposite. Police shootings became the common news headline, though we all know there were far more that weren't broadcasted. People refused to follow simple rules and now look at us. The Capitol building was stormed and coronavirus cases have only gone up. Our president and his followers have finally lost their minds and it all just went downhill. For me, it wasn't all that surprising, but it was terrifying to wake up and hear about another Black death, another police shooting. I began to fear going out in public. I'd heard about police violence a bit before, but never to this extent. Some nights, thoughts of being murdered, chosen to protect me, kept me awake. The fact that our president didn't seem to care at all what happened to me or my people was terrifying. The fact that it was almost guaranteed a police officer would get away with killing more of my people was horrifying. The fact that me, holding a cell phone, could be mistaken for carrying a gun made me question if people had some screws missing. Black people as a whole make up around 12% of America's entire population. 12%. Someone please enlighten me on how we are somehow the most likely to be killed. Why is it that 99% of police brutality cases end with no charges against the officers involved? What kind of logic makes the people in charge think it's okay to let them go without consequences? One of the things they taught us in middle school is that you are held accountable for your actions. Why aren't they? Issues like these make me really question things. How can someone sit there and just ignore everything that's going on? How can someone kill another person entirely based off of the color of their skin? It hurts me a little when I go fishing and the fish die after we put them in the bucket. I can't imagine how someone could take another person's life. I also don't understand how you could keep treating a race so horribly after years and years of oppression. It's like it's an addiction or something. It's what kind of sick happiness does one get from putting other people down, much less a whole race of beautiful, culturally rich people? I also don't really get where people got the idea that we are the color black. Though I'm proud to be black, we come in all different shades, from the darkest browns to almost the same color as those who oppress us, if not lighter. Every shade is unique and beautiful too. Police brutality isn't the only problem involving the black community in 2020. Another thing, something I never really taken much notice in, was cultural appropriation. Cultural appropriation can be defined as adoption of an element or elements of one culture by another. This probably doesn't sound so bad, but it's quite negative. When someone appropriates a culture, they're taking something from the culture, being respectful of its origins or the people it belongs to. Sometimes even going as far as taking something, for example, cornrows, and calling it your own. Looking at you, Kim. I'd never seen too much of this until I decided to educate myself. What I found was just outright disturbing. The most disturbing thing that stuck out to me was melanin injections. In my researching period, I found that many examples of teenagers on social media platforms were getting melanin injections or very heavily fake tans to make their skin look brown, some even turning themselves darker than I am. Some post as black people calling their looks exotic and different because they had Eurocentric features but brown skin. Over many, many years, people have ridiculed prominently black features. Big lips, wider hips, bigger breasts. Those weren't part of the European beauty standard, and many called those features ugly. Box braids, cornrows, afros, dreads. Those were all seen as unprofessional in many work settings, some kids even getting expelled for wearing such hairstyles. Now, all of a sudden, it's trendy and cool for people of the very race who saw these features and hairstyles as ugly to wear them. People get plastic surgery and lip fillers trying to achieve the same features they once ridiculed. Please make it make sense. How is it okay for a white person to wear box braids, but when I do it, I'm hood or ghetto? They can have big lips, brown skin, and look beautiful and exotic, but when someone like me or my family members who are born with those features are born that way, they're not seen the same way. It's the same way with speech, too. The stereotype is that black people don't use proper grammar. They use slang and cuss words. How is it that when we talk this way, we're seen as uneducated, yet when kids my age do it, they're cool? If you want our looks, take them, but take the struggle with you. You want our hair? Take it, but take the exposures and less opportunities. Take the system that's built against you. Take the hate, discrimination, the fear when you get pulled over by a white cop. I know, not every white cop is going to shoot me or treat me unkindly, but when I look at the news, it is hard to convince myself that they won't. People want all the looks, the hair, the skin, the clothes, the music, but they don't want the struggle. They don't want to lose their white privilege or freedom. I know it's not just white people, but sometimes I forget. I forget that America is the land of the free. I forget that not every white person isn't racist. I forget that cops are there to protect me. I forget that America's a good place. I hope my generation can fix the wreck our ancestors have created. I really do. If not my generation, then the next one after that. I feel as though I've had to grow up a little faster.
Well, that is a great story, and that was pretty mesmerizing. You know, the sick addiction that you made reference to, that's an awfully powerful image. And I loved the fact that you kept repeating, I forgot this, and we forgot that, and we forgot that, and I forgot this. Because we have to be reminded of things. That's the obvious, right? Well, to ask you if there's a systemic racism is a ridiculous question. Clearly, I know you think there is. How do you think the Derek Chauvin trial is going? This is a tough question to respond to in a few seconds. Do you have any feelings about that?
I just hope that they get justice. A lot of people don't, and I just hope that they do.
Perfectly said, beautifully said. Nia, have you heard Wilson's story before?
I haven't. This is the first time I'm hearing it.
What do you think? What are some of your impressions? Pretty powerful.
It's very powerful. And I think it's important for people, I mean, adults and kids our age, just to hear what's going on. I know some parents try to block out what the kids hear, but it's important that they hear this.
Right. Gabby, what are your thoughts? Have you heard this story before?
I have not heard this story before, but I really like it. It has a lot of information and facts, and nothing is sugar-coated.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it is not sugar-coated at all. It's very clear, very, very concise. All of you are great participants. You're all kind of nodding at each other. And it occurred to me, it always does when we do a show with your group, that you often don't listen to each other's stories. So we're going to try to get a take on how some of you feel, how all of you feel about some of the other stories, which will be kind of fun as this unfolds. Okay, so there are a lot of lessons to this story, Wilson, obviously a lot of lessons. Every story has a series of parables, but what is the single most important takeaway that you want us to get from your narrative?
I think the most important takeaway is just that there's so much you don't know, and so I just want people to go out there, educate themselves the way I had to educate myself about issues within my own community that I didn't even realize were happening.
You know, staying with a related theme, Gabby Marshall's narrative, My Perspective, is a fusion of self-reflection and an expose on a popular civil rights icon. Gabby's interest is no surprise because she's fascinated by her ancestry and how history helps define us. This very creative sixth grader loves many things, but writing, of course, tops the lists. Gabby, what inspired you to learn about your ancestry? There's a lot of reasons. One day I just woke up and said, I wonder who I am. But in your case, what inspired you to just become interested in your ancestry?
My dad inspired me
What did he say? What did he say to get you interested?
He was telling us about his family, his past. My mom was kind of telling me a little bit about her family. And I was so mesmerized about everything we went through in our past and how we came to now. And I was like, I want to know more. I just have to know more.
Yeah. One of the things I always talk about when I think about storytelling, I think you guys can understand this and appreciate it. I think we're all born as a blank book, a blank page. And every page is filled with stories, right? Every page, every day. And they help to define us and validate us. And I think the idea of learning more about our ancestry is such a big part of filling that book. And I'm so proud of the fact that you're doing it. Tell us your story.
Everyone talks about BAME, Black Lives Matter, of course. But today will be a different story. It will be my story as growing up as an African-American girl in 2021. Being a child of color is not as easy as being white or of another race. When I was 9, my parents made me and my little brother watch The Hate U Give, which is a movie about police brutality. My brother was 8, so it was kind of scary for him to watch. But my parents were just showing us what happens if you don't listen carefully to a police officer, especially if you're a person of color. Many African-American youth are taught to put their hands on the dashboard and listen to everything the police officer says when stopped. Here are the rules. Number one, listen to everything the police officer says. Number two, don't make any actions to show that you're a threat. And number three, if you get cuffed and make it to the station, call home immediately. Do you see how I stated if? There shouldn't be an if there, but sadly there is. Because many times, people of color don't make it to the station at all, but instead the graves. This is what most African Americans have to go through. Take 1 second and imagine having to teach your child that. It's kind of cruel, right? But African American parents have to make sure that we understand how this world works based off the color of our skin. There are some police officers that aren't like this, and those are the ones that should be protecting our cities, homes, and country, not the ones that kill because they don't like the color of my skin or someone else's. It's kind of hard for African Americans to see which type of police officer they're about to face, if it's going to be a good one or bad, because most of the time, the bad ones pull us over or arrest us. And usually, we get treated poorly. I don't see color. My mother always taught me not to judge people of what they look like. I think the person you are defines you, not the color of your skin. If I was wearing a black hoodie and walking down the street, does that make me a thug because I'm African American? No, it does not. You don't even know who I am, but you get to judge me because the color of my skin and what I'm wearing. If I were to prick my finger and you were to prick yours, we would both bleed red blood. Let me give you an example on how people of color get treated differently. Also, the example I am about to give you is not to offend anyone, so I apologize if you think this is offending. My brother, my dad, and I were in the store. A shop assistant was following us throughout the store because we were the only people of color in the store. So you see, just because I'm a kid of color does not mean I get special treatment. When some people see the color of my skin, they start to think negative thoughts about me. It's kind of hard for me to understand why they think this, but I guess they just think bad about me because I look different. Sometimes people don't understand that what you think about people, what you say, really hurts their feelings. Because judging them does not make them worse or less fortunate. I think that the person you are will always define you. And I kind of feel sad for those people who are judging because I could be a nice person. My sister, my brother, or anyone you meet could really be a nice person, and you just haven't gotten to know them yet. And it's not just African Americans. You could be Asian. You could be any color. You just don't get to judge them. Well, this is my story. Also, don't let anyone define you by the way you look.
Okay, very cool story, and it's a great continuation of what we had heard a few minutes ago from Wilson. Now, you had mentioned to me that Rosa Parks is sort of a role model for you. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about why she was so special. She's like that icon that I know that you had mentioned to me earlier when we were preparing for this program. And I loved some of the things that you were saying about her. What is it about her that makes her so special in your mind?
So first off, she's a woman, and I think all women are powerful, men too, but personally, she was a woman of color. She was powerful. She didn't let anyone define her, tell her to move, even though she was in her space.
And you know, let's talk about the obvious. The obvious is that she did something about this. You know, so many of us are bothered by inequality on so many different levels, but she did something about it at a time when it was really difficult to do that. So, you know, we have these role models, and I love your case study because your case study goes beyond just conceptualizing the idea of systemic racism. It really talks about how you were feeling and how your family was feeling. And we can't ignore our feelings for people because it's feelings, right? It's feelings that define us. It's how we walk away from an event, wondering why we feel the way that we do and why people make us do that. But, you know, let's not forget one fundamental thing. We can choose to feel any way we want, right? So we have to become strong and persistent, tenacious, and we have to feel powerful enough to know that we are fine, accepted, and of course, that's the only way to really get through these difficult, difficult times. Addison, have you heard this story before?
No, I have not.
You have not. What do you think about Gabby's story? Pretty powerful, too. Hers, of course,
it's so powerful, and it's a very prevalent topic now, and I think it's very important that both she and Wilson got to talk about it, and both of their perspectives were really enlightening. I'm not a person of color, so I haven't really gotten these sort of inside perspectives.
And it's important to gain these perspectives. Giselle, what about you? Have you heard this story before?
No, I haven't. But I really think it's empowering for people to hear this if they are a person of color or if they are, like, because some people don't even know what's going on with their own race. And I feel like it's very important for people to hear other people's perspectives on it.
Right. You know, and perspectives are so important, and these impressions are important. And I love asking you, all of you, what you think about these stories, your impressions. It's interesting that you don't listen to each other's stories. I mean, after all, you practice together, right? I would imagine. And sometimes you have a sense of what the other person is thinking about and what your friend's narrative has to say or the meaning behind it. But it's sort of interesting to listen to this as we're doing a program, because as it unfolds for the first time, your impressions are going to be very similar to the impressions our listeners have, right? As they listen to your stories as well. Shifting to a little different tone, Addison Wolf is an eighth grader. She's very old, so we want to make sure that she gets to sleep early tonight, right? She's an eighth grader with a penchant for 1800s fashion, gardening, and acting, where she played in such classics as Xanadu, Addams Family, and a special take on Midsummer's Night Dream. Addison, I know that I asked you this question, but tell listeners what you find so appealing about 1800s fashion. That's something I swear I've never heard anyone your age become sophisticated enough to even demonstrate interest in that area. So what is about 1800s fashion?
I really love the poofy silhouette. I like kind of, I'm into musical theater, and there's a lot of big costumes, and I'm just in love with the silhouette and how decked out and sparkles and feathers. And
Do you have any 1800s fashion yourself?
No. I'm hoping to be able to try and make a dress that resembles it.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I love that. You know, with your range of interests, it's not surprising that you have a story entitled Reducing Emissions. I finally got that title right. I apologize. And I'm curious, since this is so different from, obviously, 1800s fashion, what stirred your interest in this topic?
In fifth grade, I did a project about it. And over the past few years after that, I've just been researching more and more, and I found out that it's not one single source that's causing this huge problem. Mm-hmm, it's something that everyone is contributing to, but not everyone is, not everyone knows how serious and imminent this disaster is, and it's very important that they take their action.
Where to learn more about it? Tell us your story.
Global warming is a big problem, big enough to cause the end of the human race. Big problems tend to have multiple causes, but one of the main contributors is the emission of greenhouse gases, such as methane, carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and water vapor. These gases trap heat in the atmosphere, which causes the greenhouse effect. That's why the global temperature is rising. Excessive amounts of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are like wearing a jacket and sweatpants to the beach. You're going to have a heat stroke. It's unfortunate that it's even necessary to clarify this, but there's a large community of people who deny the existence of climate change and global warming, despite the facts. Climate change is real. Even with just a quick look at some statistics from NASA, you can tell that the amount of carbon in the atmosphere is not normal. Scientists at NASA did studies of the air trapped in layers of a glacier's ice. They found that the global carbon dioxide levels were never more than 300 parts per million until around 1850. Since then, it's been growing and growing exponentially past the 300 mark. As of now, we are at about 415 parts per million. Extreme growth in this trend started around the Industrial Revolution, you know, when we started burning coal and oil to power life. Since then, we've started using more and more fossil fuels to fulfill our need to power things in day-to-day life. All the energy that we got from burning the coal and oil, the byproducts get released into the atmosphere. These are emissions, and they're causing global warming and the temperature to rise. The trend line for carbon emissions lines up almost exactly with the global temperature increase. This data is insane, and there's a point where it will be dangerous to our survival. How does it threaten our survival, though? Well, the unnatural rise in global temperature will make ice melt, and the sea levels will rise. Coastal cities such as Houston will go underwater. The entire country of Greenland will melt away. The weather will be insane. Hurricanes, floods, and tornadoes will be more common. There will be intense heat waves and drought in some places, while others will be swamped from lots of rain and flooding. There's a point where these effects can't be reversed. Is that a world you want to live in? Well, what do we need to do? The goal is to reduce emissions. With fewer greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, we can try and pull ourselves together and bring nature back to a stasis. How do we do that, though? Well, the big thing that's trying to be accomplished is converting to green energy. This kind of energy comes from renewable energy sources, doesn't produce greenhouse gases, and doesn't harm the environment. Some examples of natural green energy sources are hydroelectricity, solar power, and wind power. Of course, every option has its downsides, usually related to price, but we must pay that price to not pay the price of not stopping it. President Joe Biden and other Democrats are trying to pass the Green New Deal. This deal will create millions of jobs related to the green industry. It will help expand the green industry in an attempt to get to net zero emissions and save the environment. Once we manage to stop releasing greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, we can clear out some of what's already there in order to bring things back to normal. There are many projects and inventions that are trying to help this, as well as more standard approaches. One of these standard approaches is planting trees. Trees are like carbon vacuums. They take in CO2 from the atmosphere, keep the carbon for itself, and then release the oxygen back into the world for us to breathe. A tree's mass is made up of a ton of carbon. So think about all the forest fires that have happened. That's why we need to reforest. That's why we need to prevent these forest fires from getting too far. The trees being burnt is like just releasing all their progress back into the atmosphere. People have also come up with their own methods of solving global warming, from planes releasing chemicals to cool the atmosphere to planes that can take carbon from the air to use as fuel. What can you do, though? How can you help? Well, you need to reduce your carbon footprint, the amount of emissions produced because of your actions. And there are so many ways to do this. You can become a vegetarian. Livestock takes up a lot of space, which needs to have its trees removed. The population is expected to grow, which means the amount of meat and therefore land needed will grow as well. Livestock also produces a lot of methane gas. A single cow, one cow, can produce up to 200 kilograms of methane per year. A less extreme alternative to becoming a vegetarian is adopting Meatless Monday, just not eating meat on Mondays. Another thing you can do is not purchase fast fashion. Fast fashion is how the clothing industry mass produces cheap garments quickly. The production process itself, along with the making of the fabrics and other things, contributes between 8 to 10% of global emissions. Find secondhand clothing, sew your own clothes, or make sure the brands you buy from are sustainable. Drive less. Cars burn fuel and release exhaust that goes up into the atmosphere. Electric cars are more expensive, but the batteries used are still questionable when it comes to disposing of them. if you're not going to go too far, walk, ride a bike. It's better for you and the environment. Of course, we still rely on electricity to power things such as our phones and appliances. The power generated by burning fossil fuels, which releases a ton of carbon, so we need to switch to green or renewable energy. Yes, it's a little more expensive, but that extra cost should decrease once more people choose renewable energy. Some energy providers also have separate green plans. Finally, one of the best things you can do is educate others. Near the beginning, I mentioned that there's a whole community that doesn't believe in climate change. They say it's a hoax. Inform others, show them the facts, make them believers, because we can't fix this problem without everyone helping and believing. Don't ever think that you can't change anything or that you don't matter. Don't think that you switching to green energy won't affect anything. You have great power to make changes in your lifestyle and inspire the community around you to make those changes as well. Your voice matters and can have great influence, especially in this age of social media. Your voice can go so far and influence so many people, especially to go out and help change the world today. Be one of the world's heroes who helps reduce the effects of global warming. Our time is running out.
Wow. What a very poignant essay. You know, global warming, ending the human race, that is a powerful, powerful statement. And you believe that's true, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it was funny when you kind of stopped for a moment after you said that Greenland will disappear, you know, and I was thinking to myself, that'll give reason for anybody to take pause, you know, pun intended. I thought you might find that a little funny since you paused for a moment, because that's exactly what it would do. Wow. Yeah. And there's no fast fashion of the 19th century, was there?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, Giselle, what did you think of this story?
I think it's very important for people to know about, because I feel that some people, they just don't care about the earth that they're living in, because I've seen some people, they go to a restaurant and then they just throw their trash on the floor and leave it there and throw it out their car, or they just like throw it on the ground when there's a trash can right there or a recycling bin right there. And it's because I know it affects the earth in a way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I don't think a lot of people know about this. I really don't. Yeah. Wilson, what do you think?
I thought that it was really enlightening to know all that information. I mean, she used a lot of statistics and facts, and I found it interesting that the whole country would just melt like that.
Yeah. Ooh, wicked witches melt, but I didn't think a country could do that. I know. Yeah. That is staggering. That's really staggering. And by the way, you know, we're producing this at home. So if any of you listen to your stories and you figure, yeah, I'm sounding a little raspy, you're not. You're sounding perfect. Just letting you know, technology can do strange things to your voices. So please don't worry about that when you listen to yourself, okay? Just wanted to make sure that you know that. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are enjoying my guest storytellers from Meyerland Performing and Visual Arts Middle School, Addison Wolf, Gabby Marshall, Giselle Martinez, and Wilson Terry, and Nina Lewis on So What's Your Story, only on KPFT, Houston's community station, on 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. You know, among other things, storytelling proves that expression isn't simply important, it's everything, because stories validate who we are. And don't think for a moment that you're not a storyteller, because everyone is one. You just need to find the right place to prove it, and here's the perfect place. It's our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Zoom into our monthly story swaps the fourth Tuesday of every month by accessing the link on our website, www.houstonstorytellers.org. Our next swap is April 27th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And by the way, ladies, all of you can do this too. Every one of you can. Think about it. While you are on our site, why not become a member? It's very easy and it's cheap to join and enjoy all of our So What's Your Story program since 2008 under radio program on the menu. And please do visit our So What's Your Story Facebook page for guest program information. And if you have ideas for a show or guest, maybe yourself, drop us a note at story@kpft.org. I was going to say all of you, all five of you are written extensively on our Facebook page. So make sure that you guys check it out, right? And we love it if you like us when you leave. Our friends at The Moth may not be packing in the warehouse live, but themoth.org is one of the best places to enjoy some of the best stories on the planet. And another great place to turn for something a little different is StoryCorps.com. Some of you right here today, our tellers, are interested in ancestry. That's a great place to go. And also, if you're interested in taking your storytelling skills to the next level, why not become a member of the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network? Nia Lewis is in the sixth grade and is interested in everything from travel to writing stories, plays, and poems. Nia, what helps you determine if you're going to write a play, a poem, or a story? Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Did you write them all? How do you decide?
I would have to say something that I'm interested in or something that inspires me. My favorite, I like to write like stories, and you know, I can write a whole story about traveling right now, right? Or other concepts that inspire me.
But how do you decide whether you're going to write a story or a poem?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you wake up one day, you say, you know what, I want to write a poem today or a play today. How do you make that decision?
It's honestly just whatever I feel. I mean, I don't really have a specific way that I determine, okay. But let's say, hey, I wrote a story yesterday. Why not write a poem today?
Right. Today's play day. Today's poem day. That's how you think about it. All right. Love it. Your story is one that resonates with many of us, and it's called My Quarantine Glow Up, right? We look forward to it.
The year of 2020 is truly one to remember. It started off like any other year would, but ended by teaching me three important lessons. It was near the end of fifth grade. Not only was I turning 11 years old, but I was also starting my own business, the University of Motivation and Inspiration. However, the year had other plans. It was March 13th, 2020, a few days after my birthday, when the global pandemic took over. I was preparing to have my book launch party for my business that weekend. On the other hand, the healthcare department permitted more than 10 people to be in one room. That to say, I hosted a small gathering with close supporting friends and family. And like any other person, I wanted things to be perfect. I wanted everything to go my way. And you might think, well, that sounds selfish. However, not being able to have a launch for a huge accomplishment taught me lesson number one, which is that you don't need a celebration to celebrate an achievement. Even though I was not able to have a grand celebration, I was still able to share my business with people that I am now exceedingly grateful for. The next lesson I learned from the pandemic was all about friendships. During quarantine, I learned who my true friends were. And naturally, I use the label friend, often not knowing who my real friends were. It is essentially like that saying, what appears to be isn't what it always seems. In the earlier days of online school, I lost friends and separated from people, as usual. But there were at least three classmates that I kept in close contact with. And all was normal until we became distant before heading into middle school. But in spite of the fact that there was a great amount of confusion about who my true friends were, there were two people that stuck with me the whole way. And losing the other people in my life only brought me closer to who my true friends were. I also realized that the people who are in my life are there for a reason. The last lesson I learned, which is personally my favorite, was that I needed to get closer to God. I realized that before the pandemic, life was a continuous cycle of school and my home life. I never got to study my Bible or talk to God other than just saying a quick prayer before bed. Lockdown changed that for me completely. God gave me the time to talk to him and get into his word most mornings. I now know that God can make ways for his children to bring them closer to him. He opened my eyes to many new things that I will appreciate forever. The year of 2020 has taught me many, many things, but I believe that it's all a part of God's plan. As I am still growing and learning many lessons, I cannot wait to see what God has in store for me.
Wow. I was just thinking, just taking some notes, because this was, you know, it's a short story with so much in it. You have three lessons that you were talking about, right? What's the one lesson that you want to hone in on? If you had to identify one as being most essential, most important?
I would say the third lesson, because this is all a part of God's plan, and I want people to realize that things happen for a reason. I mean, this pandemic taught me so many things, I'm sure anybody else in this room, and that the way we can get through life is by trusting in Him and having faith.
Yeah, you know, and I love the story for a lot of personal reasons. I don't know if your teacher told you I had COVID last March. It's been a little over a year, and I was very ill, very ill. I was in the hospital, and it was just a terrible experience, so much so that I was actually at the Tejas Storytelling Festival last month telling a story about how I feared that I was going to die, literally. I mean, literally. Wow. I was seeing lights. I was seeing people I thought I knew. It was totally frightening, and it was totally transformational. And I think all of your stories are transformational. That's why they're so powerful. And this one is truly falls under that category too. Things happen for a reason. Gabby, have you heard the story before?
No, but I thought the story was amazing. Yeah, I also love the title.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah. The rest of you, did you hear it? Giselle, do you ever hear the story before?
No, I've never heard the story before, but I think it's very, like, I love hearing her point of view, because I feel like COVID-19 has been something that has changed all of our lives very, either very heavy or not very heavy, but I feel like it changed our lives a lot, because now we have to wear masks when we go out and social distance, and it's very different from what we were used to.
What do you mean when you say that, like, we're not used to? What were you saying?
Well, we've never really, I was born in 2009, but what I'm used to, we weren't used to going in the store and having to put on a mask, right? We stand, like, far away from each other in the line at the grocery store. It's just like that. That's very different in that order.
Yes. Good point. Really a very, very good point. Excellent point. You know, none of these incredible students know what they want to do for a living, but regardless of what they choose, you just know they're going to be unbelievably successful, because each really blend the magic of inquiry and passion, because just as Emerson writes, there are two types of poets in the world, one born of education, the one we respect, and the one born of heart, the one we love. And I don't just make this up, ladies. I think that the five of you really fall under that category. You combine this passion with inquiry just so beautifully, so beautifully. Like her peers, Giselle Martinez, whom you just heard, is artistically ambidextrous to compose, draw, and produce music, are inextricably connected to the sixth grader, but it's her musical journey, which is also the name of her story, that took her on a noteworthy excursion. Let's jump into the story. Giselle, you might want to move away from your mic a little bit, because there's a little bit of static and we don't want to miss a beat. No pun intended. Or maybe there was a pun intended. I don't know.
My musical and fine arts program started at Garden Village Academy. This is where I was introduced to something that would change my life. I never really believed I started my adventure in music. At the age of 7, which was in second grade, my music class taught us how to read music, and we were introduced to the flutophone. We used the flutophone as a learning tool that helped us with our fingering and breathing strategies used on instruments. The next year, in the year, I would finally be able to play different instruments. I had to take classes of every instrument to see which one I liked best and if I would enjoy learning it. I started with piano, which I really liked, but was not my first choice. I also attended a violin, xylophone, and choir classes to see if they interested me. I knew the norm for girls was to pursue in the playing of a clarinet or flute, but that wasn't for me. All I envisioned myself playing was the snare drum. I can't explain what it was that pushed me to be a percussionist, but I knew it was for me. I always enjoyed hearing the beats from the snare. I was excited for fourth grade, where I was going to be able to touch the snare and those drumsticks. I couldn't wait to be able to play beautiful music with the dream of one day being a part of a large ensemble like All City Honors Band. All City is an ensemble made up of the most talented HISD band students in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. This became a goal and a dream that would soon one day become possible if I put the work in and practice every chance I could. I stayed after school every day and worked hard beside a great music teacher that taught me to believe in myself. My music teacher made it clear that with all the hard work, I was getting better every day. Soon it was the real test to see if I was good enough to be a part of the ensemble of my dreams. I once thought it was not possible with anxiety making me doubt myself, but I never stopped. I tried out for the All City Honors Band for the first time in 4th grade and performed a solo called Snare Etude for the Judge. Along with nervously waiting weeks for the results and my teacher always reminding us that 4th graders usually don't make it, finally the results were posted and I couldn't believe I did it. It felt like such an accomplishment knowing I would be one of the only 4th grade snare drummers in the All City Honors Band. At that moment, I knew that all my hard work had paid off. It was awesome knowing it was a dream coming true. I would soon be in front of an audience, performing with a great ensemble being conducted by the retired TSU conductor, Benjamin Butler. Honors Band taught the musician and me to have great performing skills and helped me believe in myself. I was also chosen again in 5th grade to be a part of the ensemble. With everything I learned, I chose to audition for Meyerland Middle School. Here I am today, now a 6th grader, playing in the symphonic band. Due to the pandemic, it has been a bit challenging for us as a band this year. However, I am still excited about what the future holds when the pandemic is over. Along with band, I discovered a new challenge in my life, broadcast journalism, where I am challenged to become a great reporter and see what the future has to offer in this exciting field. I am thankful for the opportunity and experience I was able to gain being involved in the ensemble. I give credit to my challenges in trying out, learning the skills, and performing in the All City Honors Band. Along with accomplishing my goals, never thinking it would ever happen, I am so proud of myself to feel accomplished and excited for what challenges the future holds. Looking forward to the future, I am on to my new challenge in 2021, thanks to All City Honors Band.
All right. Addison, I saw you, applauding her, right? You never heard the story before?
No.
And pretty amazing, right?
Yeah.
Pretty amazing, yeah. It all surprised you, kind of?
Just being one of the only people of such a young age to get such a huge honor, that's just so amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. Now, speaking about an honor, you have a story, right? You've got a story that you put together, it's really the two of you, right? So it's you and... Nia, correct?
No, Wilson.
Wilson, you and Wilson, excuse me. You and Wilson are putting this together. And, tell us a little bit about it. Do you need to tell us about it, or you want to kind of jump right into it?
It's like a combination of personal experiences on my part and just advice in general concerning the LGBTQ plus community as a member myself and
being an ally.
Tell us the story. We're looking forward to it. And by the way, Giselle, you know, I looked up your hero, Sheila Escovedo. Are you impressed that I found out who she was?
Yes, very.
Okay, good. I just wanted to impress you. You guys are impressing me. I wanted to do something to impress you. Okay, let's hear your story.
Before we begin, we implore you to just please listen, especially if you disagree with us. It's very important that you hear the perspective of someone from the LGBTQ+ community and understand why being an ally is important, why it's right, and what to do as an ally. We hope you embrace our opinions and experiences, even if they do not match your own. Thank you.
Hi, as you probably already know, my name is Wilson.
And my name is Addison, and we're here to clear up some things when it comes to being an ally to the LGBTQ plus community. The first thing is when someone comes out to you.
I recently came out to my parents and a few friends as bi and demi-romantic, and it is very nerve-wracking to do so. The thing people don't realize is that when someone comes out to you, they're terrified of your reaction. It's putting a lot of trust in the person you're coming out to. If they don't accept you, it can be detrimental to your mental state, can lead to self-hate problems, second-guessing yourself, and trust issues. For some of the friends I personally came out to, their reactions were very hard to gauge what their actual views on the LGBTQ plus community were. Even the slightest hint of insincerity in the way you respond can plant a big seed of doubt in the person that's come out to you. It definitely did for me. I began wondering, do they actually accept me? Are they just saying it to be nice?
When someone comes out to you, be enthusiastic and obviously support them. Don't treat them any differently afterwards, except for maybe calling them by their preferred name or pronoun. They're still the same child, friend, or colleague that you know and love. They've just shared another part of themselves with you. It's not worth the extreme of cutting a person out of your life, disowning them, or taking them out of the will. In addition, check with the person to see who else they have come out to, so you don't out them to anyone who doesn't know yet. A person chooses who to come out to and when very carefully. Perhaps they've decided not to tell a certain person because it would jeopardize their situation. For example, if you told your friend's parents about your female friend's girl crush, and the parents were very religious, your friend could get kicked out of the house or forced to attend a homophobic religious camp, which will try and teach your friend that gay is a sin, and put them back in the closet.
One of the people I came out to, let's call her Sarah for confidentiality reasons, accepted me at first, and then a few weeks later showed her true colors. She began saying that I had the devil inside of me, that I chose to like girls, and that I was going to hell.
Which brings us to religion. Please, please, please do not bring religion that is against the LGBTQ plus community into things. Your child or friend isn't disobeying God in any way. They can still be mothers and fathers through adoption, surrogacy, or other modern methods of reproduction. If you think that redefining marriage is bad, consider the Constitution. It is a very old document written by very wise men. The Founding Fathers were wise enough to allow amendments to be made because they knew that times would change. Times have changed. Marriage and love aren't the same anymore.
If the God y'all are talking about, if y'all say he is, then he'd love everyone the same, no matter what gender, sexuality, or race. That's like his main thing, love your neighbor as yourself. And then to say you're disobeying him by being LGBTQ, nobody chooses to like the same gender or who they love. Love is love. No, but you don't just wake up one morning and decide to be gay or bi or pan. It's not a choice. It's who you are.
The default shouldn't be straight until proven otherwise, either.
Another thing to consider if you're a parent and your child comes out to you, don't say it's just a phase. If your child is old enough to decide they're straight, they're old enough to decide they're gay or lesbian or trans or pan or bi or asexual or any of the other sexualities and genders out there. Don't downplay their feelings just because they're young. If anything, kids would understand themselves better than an adult would because their minds are more open to new ideas. If I told my 5-year-old cousin what gay or trans was, he wouldn't say, oh, that's wrong, that's unnatural. If it does turn out to be a phase, that's okay too, but don't assume it is just because it's not what you want.
Say, for example, your best friend or child is a lesbian. When you hang out or talk about anything concerning love and relationships, talk about their girl crushes the same as you would about your boy crushes.
Be supportive without it being weird, fake, or making it seem like being part of the community is so exotic or exciting.
It's completely normal.
It is exciting for someone to find themselves, but being gay or trans or pan or demi or asexual is no more exotic than being heterosexual. Another thing I'd say is let them come to you. Don't assume a person's sexuality because that's playing into stereotypes set around that sexuality.
A man being feminine does not mean he's gay. Also, gay should not be an insult.
It seems to be a popular insult amongst 11 to 14-year-old boys, but it really shouldn't be. Treating the word gay as an insult only encouraged discriminatory behavior towards that sexuality, and frankly, isn't a nice thing to hear if you're in the closet.
For those of you using it as an insult, you're really just calling someone happy, as that is the other dictionary definition.
As a member of the LGBTQ plus community, I'd say the biggest thing an ally can do is just be supportive. That probably seems like the obvious thing to do, but I really do mean it. If you see someone being picked on because of their sexual orientation, defend them. Don't sit there and say, I support them, and that's enough.
When something happens in the news regarding their community, such as instances of discrimination or hate crimes, be there for them. It's very stressful and scary because they wonder if they or someone they know will be next. Hate crimes against the LGBTQ plus community is just as much of a problem as hate crimes against the Black and Asian communities, as well as any other communities we're not mentioning. Not to mention a person of color can also be LGBTQ plus, which is another target on their back.
Now, being an ally doesn't mean you're expected to attend every protest or pride festival donating rainbow-colored clothing or face paint. It just means that you will support that community and stand with them and for them when they can't stand for themselves. Whether it be the LGBTQ plus community, the Black community, the Asian community, the Hispanic community, or any others we didn't list, you can be an ally and support them. It can help show them that someone out there accepts them and loves them, especially when the rest of the world says it doesn't.
In conclusion, we need more allies in our communities. We need allies who will stand up for our LGBTQ plus friends and family. Being gay, bi, lesbian, asexual, transgender, etc. needs to be normalized in our society. Being LGBTQ plus isn't something that needs to be fixed. It's something that needs to be embraced in our diverse world.
Love is love.
What a fabulous, you know, there's no way that we can, there's no way that we can process this appropriately, because this is a brilliant, brilliant creative banter. Unbelievable. You know, for years I was blown away by the creative efforts of Miss Arlt's students, and you guys simply continue that to such a degree where it's almost unbelievable. Lots of people say I want to tell stories, but you guys really do. Thank you so much, Giselle Martinez, Nia Lewis, Wilson Terry, Gabby Marshall, and Addison Wolf, for your creative clout, ability to paint verbal pictures, and for proving what tellers have known for centuries, that stories stretch the boundaries of the human heart. Tonight, you took us on journeys, treating us to experiences that will make us better people. And to celebrate this achievement, I thought we might end with Tom Cochrane's Life is a Highway. So don't you dare move, don't anyone move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of songwriters and on the Tennyson tape deck. Everybody, I want you to please make 90.1 KPFT, Houston's community station, a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. I am Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that, everyone.
It's never too late to live happily ever after.
Peace.
I'm not alone.
Listener contributions play an extremely important role in the quality of the music and news you hear on this station. If you've never made a contribution to KPFT, we need to hear from you. With the threat of reduced federal funding for public radio, first-time contributors are more important now than ever. Call 713-526-5738 now to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. We need your pledge. You make a